Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Everyone, welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode 120. We are covering Teen Wolf season 5 at the moment, up to episode 15, Amplification. So this is, you know, smack bang in the middle of the season of 5B, right at the crux of what we've been building up to with Scott's pack, and so it's a pretty major episode. So I'm one of your hosts, Natalie, and my co-host is Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. I'm very tired, Karen.
You're tired.
You don't go to bed anyway. Okay, so just now that we've introduced ourselves, if you want to reach us and talk about the show, about this episode or past episodes, you can contact us on our Twitter, which is NATWpodcast. Our email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com, our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, and you can always follow us on Instagram, natwpodcast, as well. So, jumping straight into this week's episode, we always start with our favourite quotes, with or without any context. So, Karen, what was your favourite quote from Teen Wolf Amplification?
Well, I'm going to put a disclaimer here that this might not actually be my favorite quote because
it was your favorite sentiment?
Maybe. There was a lot of really good quotes in this episode, but I enjoyed the nonverbal moments a lot more, which has happened before on Teen Wolf, so it was a little hard picking a favorite quote, but I really did appreciate when Stiles looks to Scott. And it's right when Liam is like, you need to hit me to make me angry so I can get stronger. And yeah. Stiles is just like, hit him, hit him. Yeah. And the way that he said it in his face, it was so funny.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of really good nonverbal. You're right. One of my favorites was actually when Liam, you know, asked Melissa if she's still mad at him. And then she kind of gets angry and walks away and, like, this look on Scott's face, like, when she, oh he's like, yeah. That was really hilarious to me. So, yeah, that was a good one. Mine's just the first one that made me laugh out loud because there were actually a couple of quotes I really loved in the episode, but the first one that actually made me laugh was just in the opening scene where they're sort of cutting between the different police units. And Sheriff's kind of like, Unit 5, Clark, and he dies on Parrish. Has anyone got Parrish's 20? And then they get another call in saying, all units, we have an emergency 911 emergency call. Reporting a man on fire running into Beacon Memorial. And the way Sheriff just sort of goes and like is like, Clark, disregard about Parrish and the fireman. And I loved that for some reason. There was a lot of good stuff going on here, though. Especially, I've got to give a shout out to Malia's assessment of Kira's Kitsune abilities. With so you've never worked for anything, and basically you're a cheater because Malia was amazing this episode. And also Theo, also Stiles saying what Theo needed was to be beaten severely with a lead pipe. I thought you'd like that one as well. So
yeah, it was good. This episode, I think. We all agree, but I haven't gotten your specific thoughts on it yet, that it was amazing. This is my favorite episode in a long time, if not ever. I really, really liked this episode. It was really well balanced. It had that season one Teen Wolf humor that we fell in love with but way back when, had tons of action. It still had that horror element to it. There was an incredible amount of suspense. It was just so good. Did you end up liking it as much as the rest of us?
I did. I don't know if I would say that it was like my favorite ever. I don't know what I'd quite compare it to, really. But yeah, like, there was nothing wrong with it. Like, I'm just not sure, like, what you're comparing to when you say it's your favorite ever.
Well, I think it was just a perfect episode for me. It had a little bit of everything. There are other episodes that affect me different ways, like Motel California and, you know, some of the other ones that really hit you hard for different reasons. So I'm always going to have a favorite bunch of episodes, but for me, this one was just flawless, and it just had everything that I've ever wanted out of Teen Wolf in one episode, and I just loved it so much.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I did really like it. And I don't know, it's funny, like, I don't know what you'd call, like, a perfect episode. Is perfect, like, lack of things that you had a problem with, or, like, kind of extreme stuff that you did like, or what was it that, you know, what really surpassed for you what we've seen so far?
I think it's more about how it made me feel. This episode was really streamlined. It wasn't super complicated, so it was easy to follow. And it just, it had all of those elements that I've come to appreciate in Teen Wolf all in one episode. And yeah, I think I can easily say, like, there was nothing wrong with it. But on top of that, it just, it made me happy, it made me sad, and it made me proud. And there was just, like, it hit all of those emotions at once for me. And I just came out of the episode just absolutely thrilled with it. So I don't know. I mean, again, I think that this is subjective, obviously, but for me, it was just a great episode.
You're so cute.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, I did really like it. I did really like it. And it was lots, like, there was a lot of fun things about it. And there was a lot of, you know, it was very fast paced, and it was, yeah, I very much enjoyed it. So yes, it was a good one. We're into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump right into the episode then and start with the beginning of it, which is everyone's chasing the beast down the road. But it seems like people are still denying what they're actually seeing, because the other deputies are like, we're following a large animal. And Clark's like, that's not an animal. That's definitely something else. Trust me. And I think it's funny the lengths to which people will go to deny what's right in front of them. And having just gone through Buffy season one, there's a lot of similar elements in that kind of get explained away. And it's kind of something you just have to deal with when you're doing supernatural shows. But
yeah.
I don't know. That car chase scene, though, in the beginning was a great way to start the episode.
Yeah, the editing, the cutting between the different, like, units. It was really well cut, this episode. Like, the jump cuts were, like, the sudden jump cuts were something that worked really well. And it added a tone in it that isn't often in Teen Wolf. And so I quite liked that, that part especially, actually.
And I've been feeling this way for a while, but it is now confirmed that Scott's not the beast.
Are you disappointed?
Not really. I mean, I did want him to be the beast, because I think that would have been a really interesting twist. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, this would be really tragic for Scott, for him to turn in this huge monster. So he's not the beast. It's confirmed because he was chasing the beast down. It's whatever. I mean, I'm okay with it. We also found out that it's not Strauss, because that deputy was
as well.
Yeah, he was sort of like elsewhere dealing with dead bodies and stuff like that, and car crashes and lots of fire.
I was trying to make notes of, like, okay, so we've seen you here and we've seen you here. You're probably not the beast. Yeah.
Yeah, there are some theories of who it could be that we'll get to in a little bit, because there are some people that haven't actually, like, gone up against the Beast yet. Mm. But before we get to that, the last shout-out for this cold open that I wanted to make was Styles on the Radio, because it was really funny, and it reminded me of season one when he used to listen in, and when he, like, reached for it and his father slapped his hand away and that kind of thing. But also him being like, Dad, no, really, you should listen to me because I know what I'm talking about. And of course, Scott and Styles figure out that the Beast's going to the hospital.
Why? I mean, for all his dad, like, slapped his hand away and stuff, he still has a police radio installed in his own car. Like, how did he manage that? Do you think Sheriff is like, did he just take one, or was the sheriff like, ugh, okay, I guess you can do that? Like, I imagine he's allowed to have it?
No, but I imagine that every time the sheriff, like, takes it out, Styles just finds a way to put it back in again and hide it for him for, you know, maybe a couple weeks longer.
Yeah, fair enough. I really did love that bit, though, the radio bit. I found it hysterical, and just the tone of Sheriff on the radio, like, was so angry and growly, and it was so funny.
Exasperated. He's definitely exasperated with, like, this whole situation.
Mm. Yeah, so basically, you know, what they end up hearing, like I said in my quote, was the report of a man on fire running towards the hospital, and apparently Parrish went after the Beast as the Hellhound. We don't know too much about whether this was like if he was in control, if you know what I mean, in this scene, if he was channeling his inner Hellhound on purpose, being like, hey, I know that I can fight that guy, I'm gonna go and try and help out, or if the Hellhound takes over him and he's still not in mental control and he kind of just ends up where he ends up, if you know what I mean. What are you getting about that at the moment?
I don't think that he's in control, just because it takes Stilinski a little bit to snap Parrish out of it.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. When he fight, because Scott and Stilinski find Parrish after the fight, you know, they mm-hmm. find him all, you know, smoking and a bit slashed open, not dead yet, but they had a fight. And they also see the Beast's big bloody paw prints, like it's been walking through blood, and then it fades off into sneakers, which seems a bit weird, because usually when something morphs back into a human, it doesn't still have clothes. So they kind of mention that. They're like, why would it turn into sneakers, you know, as opposed to, like, feet? And, you know, would have had to put on the sneakers, you know, but this seems to just shift as it is. We don't really have an explanation for that, but that's what we've got. They saw that the Beast can become human that quickly, like that, it turned back to human, like, only a few meters away from the site of where it left Parrish. So it is a pretty quick and easy transformation. And apparently, if it can disguise itself immediately within clothes, you know, it could be anyone. It could be, you know, it could switch very easily, perhaps, between Beast and person.
Yeah, and I think it's so hard because we see those shoe prints and I'm looking at them like, okay, what kind of clues are these gonna provide us? But there's nothing. Like, they're like tennis shoes, regular kind of flat shoes.
Yeah, they look like flat soled sneakers, you know.
Yeah, and they don't, I mean, that could be a clue, but it also could just be like what they happen to use to make the footprints. But you know, I'm like looking at everybody's shoes now and be like, okay, what do they typically wear and that sort of thing. I guess it's good to bring it up now. A lot of people are still hedging that Mason could be the Beast. I don't see the connection, just because I do think Mason is human and we haven't been given any clues that he's anything otherwise. That's not to say that it's impossible, but I have another theory, but I want to find out what you're thinking about this right now.
I thought it was Melissa. Because I know that you said that Melissa was there in the hospital doing the evacuation, and she was, but the Beast was headed towards the hospital. No one says that she was already on shift, you know, no one says that she was, we didn't know if she was in the middle of the shift or not, and it did jump around in time slightly, you know, like it jumped around, by the time we see Melissa, they're already evacuating, so they've notified the hospital you know, to evacuate, which means she could have just come in there, like, you know, morphed back into herself and started, you know, pretending to be on the job. And it, because there's a little bit of, like, a dark, weird foreshadowing when they're in that room, you know, later with Liam and Scott, and they're, you know, they're talking about the beast, and they say he, and they say, Melissa says, oh, like, she, he's like, could be a she, which is true. But she seems very dark and angry, and even in the scene where the elevator, you know, where we're meant to kind of think, oh, my God, Melissa is, look, you know, there's the elevator, ding, you know, oh, my God, the beast's going to come out. We don't see the beast. What if what was in the elevator was Parrish and Melissa was running away, you know, because not only do I think she's the beast, I also think she knows that she's the beast and that she knows that this is happening to her, but not how to, like, stop it or control it. And
you don't think she would tell her son?
No. Maybe really? Not. Maybe not. Think maybe she doesn't know how to address it. And, you know, Scott's so messed up that maybe she doesn't want to add to that.
Maybe. I would anyway, be very shocked.
Yeah, maybe, but that's just my theory, because there was some really weird, like, dark, like, when she kind of stared down at the elevator as whatever was coming in the elevator was coming towards her, she looked, like, evil. Like, it wasn't a brave, oh my God, she's facing it head on. It wasn't a scared shot. She looked like it was a sinister looking shot. So that's my current theory. It's Melissa, and that it was Parrish in the elevator and not the beast.
I mean, I can't really laugh because I suggested it was Scott, and that was a little, you know, crazy too. Okay. But my current theory, which is probably crazier than both of those, and this is more of me just hoping and trying to fit the evidence around this than actually, like, looking at the evidence and figuring it out from that.
Okay.
I really want it to be Allison.
I've thought about this before as well. This is my second theory. It's not crazy. My second theory is that that the reason that they brought back Crystal for the Maid of Gévaudan episode is to feel it out. I think that possibly that they have resurrected... I'm sure I've talked about this before. Like, I'm sure I've mentioned this before on the show, that I think that it could be that they, because it was like the Argents being tied to the Beast of Gévaudan, that, you know, it could be like that they resurrected, like, her body and, like, put the beast into her body, if you know what I mean, and that maybe they're going to, like, undo it, and then Allison's going to be, like, alive again, if you know what I mean, or, like, another version of Allison, like, maybe not Allison anymore, but some hollowed out version of Allison that has to, like, deal with the world now. And I've thought about this before. I think it's not the most unlikely thing, and maybe Crystal would come back to the show full time.
That was basically my thought process too, because they resurrected the beast. So I was like, okay, does that mean they have to resurrect somebody else? Which is why I initially thought that it was Scott. So that same thing can kind of apply. And I was like, what a great way to bring her back for the flashback and then film a scene where she's unveiled as the beast and just not, like, let that out, because you can do that in closed quarters and you know, have that leak. And then it would be such a great twist at the end of the season if it was revealed as her.
Yeah. And then she has to adjust back to being alive, or, you know, maybe they have to kill her again or something.
Oh, my. That, no. They wouldn't go there. They couldn't go there. That would just be
Karen's
awful.
Like, I refuse. It's not happening.
Refuse.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then Melissa's comment about, you know, it could be a she definitely made me think that was foreshadowing. Whether that means Allison or not, obviously, I don't know. But now I'm really looking forward to maybe it being a female inside the beast and just seeing what that means. But yeah, my top theory right now is Allison. And like I said, I think it's more hopes and dreams than actual, like, solid theory. But I don't know who else to look at right now other than Mason. And I just really feel like it's not Mason.
No, I think it could be Allison. I think it's really, really plausible. Yeah, because I've wondered about that before, if they, like, you know, rose some dead person and, you know, like, she's an Argent that is, like, tied to the Argents and, you know, I don't know, like, something. And, yeah, I've thought about it before. So that should be fun. And, yeah, maybe Crystal, you know, wants to be back on the show or something like that, and they were like, how are we going to do this? And then it's, like, surprise. So, yeah.
Yeah, you never know. Could be cool. Yeah. Hello, kitten.
Oh, can you hear him? What do you want? What do you want, kitten? He doesn't usually meow that loud. I don't know what they want. All right. Anyway.
That's okay. Okay, so moving on into Deaton actually being helpful, although morbid, as always.
He still always says it in this tone of voice that's super evil. Like, I'm like, why does Scott like him? Evil or not, this man isn't very nice or, like, comforting or anything like that. You know, he's always, like, horrible. So
he could have better bedside manners.
Yeah. Anyway.
But he does provide us with some interesting information, which is that Valak used to be the chief medical officer at Eichen House, and he ended up doing lots of experiments on supernatural creatures, like drilling holes into their heads. And this temporarily amplifies their powers, but it couldn't be contained. So it always led to death in some form or another, which, you know... Okay, I'm going to pause here. Natalie, how does this make you feel about your fave, Dr.
Valak? It makes me feel confused and bad. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, so what I'm getting here is that he was the CMO of Eichen House. And then at some point he was then interred into Eichen House as a patient. How does that work, if you know what I mean? When did that happen? How far back was it that he was... the CMO, like, did he already do the drilling in his own head? What happened to the hole in the front of his head with his scary third eye? Like, is this even the same Valak? Is this someone posing as Dr. Valak, if you know what I mean? Like, I am very confused about all of the pieces about him that don't really add up. So...
Yeah, and there's some stuff in a little bit that makes me even more confused about him.
Like, and I'm like, does he have the same motivations now as he did then, you know, or was it not really him then? I'm also curious about that kid later on that's like, did you take the doctor? Where's Dr. Fenris? Because we saw Dr. Fenris, you know, like, and then Valak, you know, Fenris turned into Valak, and I just thought that Valak was following him, if you know what I mean? Like, what's going on there? So I have no idea, but it all seems a bit messy.
Yeah, especially since Deaton says Lydia is so strong and her powers were already so advanced that trepanation will make her hear all deaths all at once, and it will kill her, and her own dying scream could kill everyone around her.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
It's like, this escalated quickly.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, I really don't know if that's what Valak is intending to happen, or, like, if he genuinely thinks he's helping, if he's on the same side as everyone else at Eichen, or if he's, like, secretly not. You know, if that stuff that Deaton showed them was, like, legit on, you know... I mean, I'm sure Deaton thinks it's legit. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's being evil. Or if it was, like, if there's something more to it. I'm not trying to, like, defend Valak, but I don't really know. It doesn't quite add up, because I want to know how we got from him being CMO and doing those experiments to him being a patient locked up in the closed ward himself. Did he put himself in there? Like, what's going on?
I definitely think that Valak thinks he's doing the right thing. And I don't think he necessarily has nefarious reasons for what he's doing. I do believe that he's on Lydia's side. However, I think he's also willing to cross that line when it comes to, like, what should and shouldn't be done for the sake of his end game. And while he may be helping Lydia now, I don't know if he necessarily cares whether she lives or dies after that. Which doesn't really make him a bad guy, doesn't really make him a good guy. It's definitely a gray area at this point, but I think in the moment he is hoping that what he's doing will make Lydia stronger and then help her defeat the Beast, the Dread Doctors, Theo, who knows, maybe all of them. I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. Not feeling great about it, regardless. We then get to the heist portion of the episode, which is when, you know, they have this information from, you know, from Deaton, and they go to the cops, you know, rightfully, like, you know, they go to Stilinski, and they're like, hey, this is all going to happen. We have to stop it from happening. Can we get her out of Eichen House? Like, can't you get a court order to, like, you know, get her signed out? And basically it's like, no, you know, her mother's the legal guardian. Her mother won't do it, all of that kind of stuff. And Stars is just like, what? So there's nothing we can do? And Stilinski goes, no, I'm saying there's nothing we can do legally. But then helps them come up with this bank heist plan, basically, where everyone's got a part to play and, like, for them to get into Eichen in order to get Lydia out. And that's a montage, basically, of Scott and Stiles explaining the plan and what part everyone is going to play. And, you know, we kind of show that, you know, this is what Kira's going to do. This is what Stiles is going to do. This is what Scott and Liam's going to do. And we kind of show it step by step, you know, everyone doing their bit of planning and how it's going to go. And we get little flash forwards to them doing it and it all working. But, of course, when it comes down to it, we'll see in a moment that that doesn't actually happen. But I did like it, and I did like as soon as they've finished telling their massively successful plan, the other three are all like, you know, they're like, any questions? And the other three are all like, yeah, this isn't gonna work. What's the worst case scenario? You know, what if I can't do this? And the actual telling, that kind of fast-paced, slightly comedic, quick cut telling, you know, really classic technique for those kind of heist scenarios, and I always enjoy it. So did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I love a good bank heist montage. Like, I don't know why, but it's just any time that they do that where, like, they're explaining the plan and they cut to actually doing the plan, I just think it works really well, and it makes it dynamic while also explaining what's going on, which is necessary to do in those moments. Mm. I think the best thing about this was that they showed it being done correctly, but then later on when they actually go to do it, everything goes horribly wrong. And I thought that was like a clever twist on how those scenes usually go.
Yeah. 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 Same. And then obviously there's a lot more of them actually getting there, but yeah.
But before that happens, it cuts back to Valak, and he pulls a Dread Doctor mask out of a cabinet, and he's got that female orderly there with him.
Can we just talk about the fact they're down in the tunnels again? Is that meant to be? Is he in with the Dread Doctors? Is that the Dread Doctor's lab that he was in?
I didn't think so. I thought it was like somewhere in Eichen still.
It was those drippy tunnel basement pipes on the walls nonsense though. Maybe they just have one set and keep using it, but like,
that is possible.
You know, I thought it actually looked like, you know, the kind of sets where they keep going down to the tunnels.
It could be,
that
honestly.
May not be a thing.
I don't know. It didn't. The little room that they were in didn't give me that same feel as the other places that we've seen the Dread Doctors, but it could be, and I just missed it. But the interesting thing here, other than the fact that, you know, he's got a Dread Doctor mask, is she says, the female orderly says, have you ever actually put that thing on someone? And Valak says, not in years. And I'm like, okay, does this mean he created the Dread Doctors to begin with?
Maybe. I mean, he seems very concerned about what they're doing. He wrote that book. Maybe it was a big accident. Maybe he did it and it was like, oh, fuck, if you know what I mean, like,
yeah,
like, and now, you know, he doesn't know how to fix it, but, and maybe now, you know, his whole thing is that he's trying to, you know, stop what he started, but I don't know.
It could be, but he puts the mask on the orderly, and I'm like, what is this meant to do? Is he trying to create a new one? Is it sort of like the torture goggles where he's gonna put it on her and it'll help them track the Dread Doctors down?
I think it may be something like that. Like, I think it may be, you know, because when he said, have you ever actually put that thing on someone? He said, not in years. Like, do you think it's a permanent, like, it's on and it's on now? Or is it like you put it on and it does something and then you take it off and it's reusable, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. But this definitely begs more questions about Valak, because he's doing some not great things in this episode, and we learn some not great things about him. But even though I don't love him as much as you love him, I am hesitant to be like, yeah, he's totally a bad guy, just because he does seem to be trying to help Lydia.
It's really confusing. I don't know. It's, and I mean, we know that the orderly sucks. So, you know, we know she's kind of a really nasty, really menacing, horrible person. So I wasn't too sad to see that happen to her.
Me neither.
But does that mean, like, you know, they're awful and she seems to think that he's on her, whatever side that she's on, if you know what I mean. But then does this mean that he's not on whatever side that she's on? Or is it just that he doesn't care about anyone and he's doing what he has to do and she's there, so he's doing that?
It felt opportunistic to me. Like, she happened to be there and he could trick her into following him. And so she was the only one sort of available to test it out on.
Hmm. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so Kira's part of the heist plan, going back to what the pack is up to, everyone's got their different parts to play, but Kira has to practice hers because hers involves pulling enough power out of the system, to cause a brownout, as opposed to a blackout where the system is actually blown completely. And basically they are practicing doing this at school. You know, so basically practicing her taking the, like, taking some of the voltage out of a power system in order to cause a brownout, and she's not very good at it, because every time she does it, she just keeps over-surging, like, causing a, well, I guess a blackout or a, you know, wiping the power out of, first of all, some light bulbs on their own, and then eventually the entire electrical grid the school's connected to. So she's not very adept at using her Kitsune powers. She's got them, but she doesn't really have good control, like, on a small, you know, on a small level. She admits that to Malia. Malia's like, how did you learn to do this? And she was like, actually, I didn't. It just happened. And then Malia's like, ugh. And then she's kind of like, think about something else that you've tried and learned how to do. How did you learn to fight with the sword? And she's like, actually, that just happened too. And Malia is very disgusted by this, which I found amusing, because it is something we've questioned about Kira before. And
not only that, but I just love, because it was Malia who said that to her, because Malia had to work so hard to bring herself back up to speed in society after living as a coyote for so long.
Yeah.
And it just made it even funnier.
Yeah, I like that that's something that, like, she values. Like, I kind of really loved Malia in this episode. So, yeah, and she had the, you know, hilarious, like, after Kira's, we see, you know, after Kira has tried, we drop back in on them, you know, after Kira's tried about another 30 light bulbs and Malia's sitting there with, you know, science goggles on because Kira keeps exploding these things in her face. And it's just a hilarious cut back to her, totally unexpected, with her head to the side and in those goggles, and it's just amazing. Like, it's just amazing. It's the best part of the episode. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know how to talk about it. Like, it's just so good.
A lot of people felt the same way, and it was, it was so funny. Just because the look on her face is like, I am so done with this, and she just... Yeah, I mean, poor Kira. Like, I kind of feel for Kira because she is trying, and yet it's very difficult for her to kind of fine-tune her powers. It's such a delicate balance she needs to have, and yet it's just, it feels impossible for her. And meanwhile, Malia's there, who's, like, the least comforting person in the pack, and she's just like, we need to do this. You need to get this done. Mm. And Kira's freaking out about it. But yeah, Malia just being done with Kira in general and the whole situation and being worried about it was pretty funny thread throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, I really, really found her great. And especially when, you know, they meet up together later on, you know, when everyone's about to, they're about to go ahead and do their plan, and, you know, Scott's all, "You can do it, Kira," and everyone, so "You can do it, Kira," and Malia's like, "What? I'm gonna be stuck in a room with her. I don't think she can do it." And Styles is just like, "Come on, you know, you can do it, Kira. I believe in you." And it's like hilarious. So
she tries, but you can tell she's just saying it to say it.
Yeah. Oh, that character is so great. Like, she's
such a good character.
To play that, like, I can't even imagine, like, Shelley, like, she's not really like that in person. Like, I haven't met her one-on-one, but she doesn't feel like that. And it's such an immersive character. Like, nearly every other character is kind of like, okay, you can see this actor. Like, you know what this actor has in their life and, like, you know, what they're putting into this role. Malia is just, like, a total alien. Like, she's just not in any way like the actress, if you know what I mean. And it's just so immersive and fantastic, and I would love to play something like that if I cared at all about acting, you know.
Not to go off on a tangent, but yeah, I've really started to love Shelley Hennig, especially this season, and just seeing like some interviews with her and the funny skits that they do. She's just really great, and I think she's super talented. Like you said, to play someone like Malia, it is quite foreign because she's so awkward, but not in that quirky kind of awkward way. Awkward in the sense that she just doesn't get societal rules, and I think there aren't a lot of female characters on television like that. Sometimes, you know, guys tend to get those sort of roles, but she's so different. I can't even think of another character, and this could just be me not having, you know, a wide range of characters in my head, but I can't really think of another character like her. And she does it so seamlessly, and she brings the seriousness to the role, but also that humor that is so dry and on point that I really, really started loving Malia, especially this season.
Yeah, and it feels real. Like, there are other characters like this out there, like, you know, that are really not socially adept in whatever way, that they don't play by society's rules, either because they're, like, a weird, meant to be, like, kind of not quite socially competent just from their lifestyle, or perhaps a personality disorder. Like, you know, like, even characters like Sherlock, or characters like, you know, some of the characters in The Big Bang Theory, and then characters like Anya on Buffy as well, who stop listening, rewatchable newbies, but is in a circumstance which is also kind of learning to live in society in a way that she never had to before. But all of those feel a little bit slapsticky, if you know what of them. All of those feel like a little bit like, okay, this is a joke. There's lots of jokes we can make about this. Isn't it funny? You know, oh, society, you know. It feels really real with Malia. Like, it is funny, and it's funnier than those characters because it feels real. But it's never like, hey, we're pointing a big arrow at it and being like, lol. It's just like, this is who this character is. They don't need to remind you, hey, you know, I was a coyote, and we didn't do that in Coyote Land. You know, it's just played a lot straighter, and it makes it funnier, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because I was thinking Anya is the closest, but even that feels more set up than Malia. Yeah. It just, yeah, like you said, it's just so natural with her. But anyway, enough praise. Psh, we're not here for that. Yeah, we totally are. But another character that I absolutely love, of course, is Melissa, Mama McCall. And she was very angry with Liam in this episode, and it was absolutely hilarious. And this doesn't necessarily have, like, a huge impact on the episode in general. We already talked about the "how are you so sure it's a he" quote, and wondering if that's a clue. But I just for a second wanted to talk about Melissa being this, like, mama bear, and just, you know, she's dealing with so many supernatural creatures, and she looks at Liam, who she knows is a werewolf, and is like, if you ever hurt my son again, I will and Jew, and Liam's terrified of this woman who has no supernatural powers, and I just love that she can bring that sort of power to the character and to that role.
I mean,
it's so funny.
They're still teenage boys, and, you know, a scary mom is still a scary mom, you know?
Yeah, but they've been through so much, and I just love that, like, even I took her seriously. I was like, do not get in her way. And after everything they've been through, you know, they could just as easily laugh her off, but they don't. And I think that's just, you know, and
I love that Scott kind of finds it funny, and he's not on either of their sides. He's not like, mom, you know, to her or anything. But when Liam kind of is like, oh my God, he like finds it hilarious. So I loved that.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So Theo apparently wants in on this plan because he thinks that he is Soviet Russia to the Allied forces in World War II. I'm like, bitch, please go home. And you know, he reckons that, you know, they're kind of like, why are you still here? And we're all asking the same question.
He needs to graduate.
Fuck that. Sorry, but you know, are we meant to put like a warning on iTunes that this has when we have swearing in an episode? Like, are we meant to actually say that? Because I see some stuff on iTunes where it has a little explicit mark, like, but not on our podcast. So oops.
I don't know. That's never occurred to me. Oh well, surprise.
Anyway, you know, like if you go onto iTunes and you look at like an Eminem album, it'll say like explicit on the track listings next, the tracks that have, you know, swears in them.
Well, nobody's turned us in yet, so.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is like illegal or something, but where was I? Theo apparently cares about school, okay. But yeah, he's there to say that he wants to help with Scott's plan because him and his gang can cross the mountain ash and, you know, Scott's pack can't. And no one wants him to help, and they basically turn him down. So he doesn't come in on the plan. He ends up taking the plan into his own hands later on, as far as I can tell. But yeah, they don't invite him in on the plan, but... he wants to help get Lydia out because he don't want to die, and he thinks that...
I mean, I don't know why they would trust him, because the same exact thing happened in the last episode. He gave the same exact speech to Malia, and then he shot her in the gut. Why would he think that they would fall for that again?
Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps because he's being honest, like, oh, I don't want to die, so I'm going to help you. But, you know, that's got us so
far. He said the same thing last week, though.
I don't know. It's really weird, like, that he is doing this. And then we had the episode last week as well where they're like, he already tried to break into Eichenhaus to get Lydia, didn't he? Like, where... or have we jumped to this moment, you know, when they're
that
like...
That was a flash forward to this moment.
When he's like, we didn't come for Lydia, you know, we came for Lydia Martin, and then Parrish comes because they want the Hellhound. And anyway, yeah, so that's a flash forward to this moment, at the end of this episode. I'm a little bit mixed up with whatever Theo's doing because I hate him, so I don't pay attention. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Why is he doing this?
Oh, I definitely think that he's telling the truth. I think he does want to survive, but I still don't think that's reason to trust him, because he will turn on them if it's in his favor.
Yeah, there's also the aspect that when they were exploding the light bulbs and stuff like that, he had his little Invisiboy spying on them.
Yeah, Corey.
Yeah, like, so there was that. What was that meant to achieve?
Oh, I think he's just trying to keep tabs on the pack.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway. They're also very blunt about the fact that Theo needs to die, so that's fun. Like, you know, Styles is just like, no, what you need is a beating with lead pipe and barbed wire, and he calls him out. You know, I just love that he's, like, smooth enough to be like, yeah... I'll admit that mistakes were made and stuff, like murders were made. So, yeah, they're really not playing nice anymore. But
And I love that Scott, I mean, Scott is Scott's a lot less vocal about not trusting Theo, but it's clear because Theo had to go off and break into Eichen on his own that Scott is not there for his crap anymore. And yeah, he's not quite as like out and out, no, you suck as Styles is, but then again, that's why Scott has Styles.
Yeah, he's there to, like, say the stuff Scott isn't allowed to say. So, yeah. And then Scott thinks that Lydia is the only one who can save all of them, presumably from the Beast, I guess. Like, why do they have this impression that, like, Lydia is the savior of all? I don't understand that at the moment.
I think it's because they're becoming aware of what Valak is doing. I think because they know that Lydia's banshee powers are growing and she's getting better at them. I think Scott also just says, like, he probably has a feeling like we all do that Lydia's a bigger part of this, so it could just be instinctual too.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm not sure about that, but I don't know why they think that Lydia has the answers, you know, to all at the moment.
I think her power's kind of like, it's a predisposition of maybe being a banshee that she tends to have the answers to things, whether she can understand them or not. But it's definitely interesting, and I definitely think they're onto something. It's going to be cool to see how it plays out. But before that happens, something else really interesting happened in this episode, and I was really into the scene between Sheriff Stilinski and Natalie Martin, just because I think they're chemistry together, considering they nearly went out on a date and now it's almost like they can barely stomach each other. There's a barrier that's gone up between them. I think that's a really interesting change. But Mrs. Martin also says, I know how to survive in Beacon Hills.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's not telling anything. Like, she won't admit to anything, but she does say that, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she says, you know, she knew something terrible was happening to her sister. Her appendix had burst. I don't know if this necessarily means that she has supernatural powers, because we know that the Banshee, like, line comes from Lydia's father's mother, so Natalie Martin wouldn't necessarily be a banshee.
Yeah, I didn't take it like that at all. I took it like, you know, that she was comparing the thing about, you know, Lorraine and Maddie and that kind of actual banshee power. I think she was comparing that to a real life, you know, kind of gut coincidence. And I think that that might have been what was happening there, that she was sort of just comparing it and then sort of hand waving it away, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it could still be like a real world example of her just knowing, because sometimes you just get a bad feeling and you call somebody up and find out like something happened. And there's tons of stories about that. But I have some more thoughts on this that we can get to later on, because we have some good feedback about this. And there are a couple other spots in this episode that brings up an interview that I read that I think has to do with her as well. But until then.
Okay. Until then, it was quite like a vicious scene, like between the two of them, you know, like it was, interesting dynamic there to go on. But they get Parrish in on the heist because they need a real deputy that people know, you know, is a legit actual deputy, and they get into Eichen House by putting the boys in body bags along with a real corpse that's like rotting and disgusting, and so they kind of go up and the Eichen House guard calls every bluff of Parrish's, like, you know, there's nothing reported here, you know, okay, you have to show me the bag, okay, you have to actually show me what's in the bag. And he really did have one, because that was part of the plan, because Styles is a good planner, you know,
yeah.
And So they borrowed a really gross body, Parrish opened that bag first, and then the guy was like, oh god, no, get it, okay, whatever, no one would go to this length to lie. Of course, yes, they would. But yeah, they managed to get in there, and then the boys get out of the bags in the morgue, and Styles manages to flop off the table while still in his bag, which was just a physical comedy moment of the highest degree. So how was that for you?
But, it was perfect. Like, and look, I really like the character that Styles has become, because he went from being the comedic best friend to a leading character that had his own story and his own tragic moments that were kind of wrapped up in everything else. And I like that he's grown so much as a person for a lot of different reasons, but I will always love the Styles that is super awkward and like flops around and falls down and is so much a part of that like physical comedy. And they really brought it back in this episode in a couple of different spots, but I think this one was like the biggest. And it was just, I don't know, it felt so good to have that Styles back. It was just so funny.
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoyed it as well. So, and it was, again, it was natural. It wasn't like, haha, let's all laugh at this. You know, it was really cleanly and naturally done. And I really, really liked that.
There were actually a couple of great gags like that throughout the episode. And one of them was Malia's man on the inside.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, so that was that. How did she get in contact with him and tell him to streak? Or is it just like she knew he did that every night or something?
I don't know. I don't know how she got in contact with him, but I love that she has a man on the inside who happens to do this all the time. And I'm like really interested in like how she knows him too.
Well, and maybe know, she used to be in Eichen House and like,
yeah, but that doesn't mean she knows there. All of the residents of Eichen House. But I just think it's so funny that like she knew that this was his thing and she was like, yes, please do it at this time or whatever. But this is how they get into the electrical closet. And then Malia is there to help Kira get things done because Kira is very hesitant. Malia's like, no, we have to go. We have like 10 seconds, that sort of thing. And I thought her like going after the wires with the scissors and Kira being like, are you crazy? And then Malia like attacking them with her claws and kind of getting like burned was just, it was so funny. And it was a moment that they didn't need to throw in there, but it added like some real levity to the urgency that everybody was feeling at this point.
Yeah, it. Yeah. Oh, Malia. I enjoy her greatly.
So do I. And the fact that she can do that and then go to one of my favorite lines actually in the episode, which I wanted to bring up here, which is why I didn't pick it as mine, was she says to Kira, this isn't about you or me. It's about Lydia. We're here to save Lydia. We're here to save our friend. And Malia has come a long way, and I'm not surprised that she said something like this anymore, but it's still gratifying that she's like, this isn't about my survival. This is about the pack's survival and about somebody else's survival. And she's just there to get shit done, and she's there to save Lydia, and I really appreciated that sober moment for her.
Yeah, no, I did as well, and it was kind of like it just occurred to her, she was impatient. She was like, stop making this about you, you know what I mean? Not in a really super critical way of Kira, but like, stop it. Like, this is more than you. Like, just get it done. Like, and because that's kind of the way that she rolls through life. She doesn't really, she doesn't really stop and think about, you know, whether she can or can't do something, or whether it's about her or not, really. She either does something because she's committed to doing it, or she's like, no, I can't do that, and then doesn't do it. So I can kind of see her, Kira's kind of wishy-washiness sort of grating on her a bit, but she sort of finds a way to make it inspirational in a way.
Yeah, I mean, she knew that this is exactly what Kira needed to hear in order to focus, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. So, Dr. Fenris, as I mentioned earlier, the boys kind of meet a bit of a flawed plan where they're kind of hiding, about to try the door, and they're kind of hiding in the alcove. The orderlies are coming down to check on patients, and this one patient can see them and starts asking them about his medication. You know, did you take the doctor? Where's the doctor? I need to see, you know, I need my medication. I need this, you know, Dr. Fenris. Like, where is he? Where is he? So do you think it's relevant that Dr. Fenris is missing?
Yeah, that's why I put this scene in here, because it felt a lot more important than just this kid alerting the guards to those three, you know, being around the corner. It felt like this was meant to tell us something, that the fact that Dr. Fenris is missing, that maybe what that means for the patients, what that means for Eichenhaus in general. I also thought it was interesting that Scott, you know, shows him his red eyes and stuff in order to shut him up, and if that's going to be a problem down the line. I mean, the kid is obviously mentally unstable, so maybe nobody will ever find out, but it felt like a bigger point to be made than just, oh, this is going to turn up the suspense for this episode by alerting the guards to their presence.
Yeah, I really don't know. It was like, I don't know if they just put in his name because they needed to name someone, or if it's any way relevant to that whole, what happened to Dr. Fenris, Dr. Valak, you know, we saw Dr. Fenris and then he turned into Dr. Valak and stuff like that. So, I don't know what to think about that, really.
Could Dr. Fenris be the beast?
I mean, he could
His name
be.
Is Fenris.
Yeah, he's not a werewolf, though. He's just obsessed with werewolves.
But what if he did something and he wanted to become...
No, I think he's past that. Like, I really would like to think that Dr. Fenris is a good guy who, you know, is past his... He knows that he's sort of the thing that he was being called delusional for is real, and now he's actually a proper doctor about it. So...
Maybe, but that's definitely something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that goes wrong in this episode is the fact that there's no card reader on the door, which I thought was so funny, because Stiles comes up with this whole elaborate plan and it's ruined by lack
there's
of a
no
key.
Card reader, yeah.
It was so great. So, of course, their solution is to break down the door, but they're not quite strong enough to do it, Scott and Liam. Except Liam comes up with this brilliant plan that if Scott punches him in the face enough times, he'll get really angry and it'll make him stronger and they'll be able to break the door down together.
What a fantastic plan.
I mean, this is definitely the plan of a couple of teenage boys. But you know what? I mean, it works, though.
It's true.
And I feel like this is also a step forward in their relationship. Is like, they talked about it before, but Liam tells him, you know, I wanted you dead, and Scott gets angry about it and punches him in the face. And there was, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but I remember all the time in, like, middle school, and even, like, my dad has said this to me, guys will... you know, get into an argument, punch each other, and get over it.
Yeah.
Girls tend to be a lot cattier in that they hold grudges and they're a lot more manipulative and vindictive about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was that moment where they're just, you know, Scott's going to punch Liam in the face and he's going to feel better about the whole situation. They can put it behind them.
Yeah, I can kind of imagine that being true. Like, I can imagine that kind of working for them, that, you know, you just got to do it and then it's fine. Like, I've seen that happen on the street. Like, I've seen this guy. I was in London, like, I was out with a friend of mine and we were going to the bus stop and he kind of pulled me just over to the, away from the middle of the footpath because these two other bros were, like, having a weird fight and he's like, you know, like, about, so he's like, oh, you trying to get at me, mate? And then the other guy, like, swung at him and said, no, mate, you know, you try, I respect you, you know, you tried, like, I pissed you off and you tried to hit me and I respect you, if you know what I mean. It's like, okay, all right, is this how we do things? That's really weird, but I guess that's just boys and now they've punched each other and it's okay or something.
Guess so.
never mind. So, yeah, they punch each other. It's all great. They break down the door. It all works out. Have we gotten past the part where Scott's disgusting unhealed wound, by the way?
Oh, that was right here. Oh, wait. Yeah. Was that right here? No, it's a little bit later.
Oh, why is it so gross? Anyway, in the meantime, Hayden, who is still for whatever reason hanging out like with Theo or doing what Theo tells her, that he is she's looking after Deucalion, who appears to be hooked up to some sort of like dialysis machine. Like, what is that? What is he hooked up to? You know how he's restrained? It looks like he's restrained. Like, is he actually...
Yeah.
He's got, like, injection. Like, he's got whatever that big, tub of liquid. Like, what's going on there?
Maybe it's Wolfsbane to keep him
like
weak.
Like a sedative or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he's just got normal handcuffs and he's just sitting next to that tank and it's a coincidence. But I don't know. It seems like he's hooked up to that. So that's weird. But he's sitting there and he kind of is like, hey, you know, I could tell you some stuff if you want to know stuff. And she's like, what? And he tells her about the Rave Wolf talons. Apparently that they were made like for a specific person with a specific frequency. You know, they're attuned to the Rave Wolf's body and that Theo probably couldn't wear them. Like that if he put them on, it would kill him. Like it would suck everything out of him or explode him or something because he'd basically get, you know, majorly, I don't know if electrocuted is the right word, but it would be like, you know, they would reject him in a fatal manner because they were not actually designed for his body.
Mm-hmm.
So does Theo know about that? Like, is he stupid enough to fall for that? Like, you know, because Hayden's kind of like, ooh, maybe we can get Theo to put them on and then he'll explode and die and I won't have to deal with him anymore. But, like, is Theo dumb enough to fall for that? Is he already expecting, you know, that to be the case? He knows about the frequencies, so does he have another plan?
I would imagine he has another plan. I really don't think he's stupid enough to fall for that. He is aware of the frequencies, so you would think that anything tied with the Dread Doctors would also have something to do with the frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I just wouldn't want him to go out that way. He needs a bigger death with somebody, one of our heroes, involved in it, because for him to just, like, put on these claws and then keel over before anything actually happens would be so anticlimactic, and I just honestly don't see them doing that.
Yeah, you could be right, honestly. I don't know, like, you know, he could have something much better in mind, you know, for the claws or something like that. So, you know, I wouldn't mind it if he got exploded, and it would also be like, okay, so he's a teenager, and he's been, like, a major character for the past season and a half. He's not even, like, he is a villain, but he's also kind of, like, he's been more of a main character than any villain has been so far, if you know what I mean. Like, there have been ones that they've been around, you know, you've had, like, you know, teachers, or you've had Deucalion, even Peter, I guess. But Theo has been not quite as sometimes on their side as Peter is, because they never really trusted Peter, but they kind of let him hang out. Theo has been an outright terrible villain, but he has been around as a main character for long enough that it might be a bit weird if one of our heroes killed him. So,
yeah,
the claws could, like, you know, maybe he could die of his own hand by accident, you know, by putting the claws on and exploding himself, and then that would kind of absolve any of our guys, you know, because it's not even them, like, killing someone who is, like, outright evil. Like, Theo does majorly suck, and he is evil, but he's also been way more of a main character than any other villain has, for whatever reason, so...
And I think the fact that he's a teenager, and because he's been so present, also makes him feel a lot more human. Mm. Like, he's not necessarily this big villain that some of the other ones have been, where you can kind of, like, kill them off and it's justified. He just feels a lot more like a real person. And so I think you're right that one of our heroes can't really cut him down because, first of all, that's not really what they do, and Scott's worked so hard to avoid that. But I can see him being hauled off to, like, the secret floor in Eichenhaus versus, which would be quite satisfying to have him live and be locked up versus, like, putting on the claws and just, like, you know, keeling over.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so I'm not sure what's going to happen there, but I don't know why Hayden's still hanging around.
Yeah, that's confusing, and I'm hoping, because she was just in this section of the episode, that maybe in the second half we'll get to see a bit more of her. But this kind of brings us to the pinnacle of the episode where all of these parts start coming together. And the first thing we get is that Styles gets past all of the barriers and all of the doors. They figure all of that out and he gets to Lydia. But the trepanation is already done. They're too late. And they're going to have to figure out how to deal with that issue, which in the previews for next week, we kind of see that coming to a head as well. But she tells Styles that all of them are going to die if he stays. And I don't know. I think it's really interesting that they kind of pitched this whole Lydia having the trepanation done thing as such a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. And yet it did happen. So, you know, what does this mean? I've actually been seeing a lot of people, a lot of article headlines being like, is Lydia going to die and stuff like that. I really don't see that happening, but this is a huge problem that they're going to have to solve.
Yeah, I mean, what exactly, you know, and Valak, after they did the trepanation, like, because that happened, basically, it's already done, you know, but he comes in and he's kind of like, you know, slightly trying to help her, you know, like trying to, you know, treating the wound and him saying that if you don't, you know, that she can save her friends by whatever it is that she has to unlock or remember or whatever it is that she can do. What is he trying to do? And what does he genuinely believe?
I don't know. I don't know if we have the answers for that. I mean, I think it's clear that he's trying to amplify her powers in order to help her do something, whether that's beat the beast, I'm not entirely sure, or the Dread Doctors, or both. I'm not really sure, like, where Valak has his target set, because I think the Beast is the current problem in their face, but it stems from the Dread Doctors, so Valak might be trying to target the source. That said, I think he is honestly trying to help them, but is it going to work out in his favor in another way that we haven't seen yet? Maybe.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's very confusing to me, like, what he's trying to achieve there. It's really, you know, quite strange. And he goes out and hides, basically, and that's kind of when she's saying to Valak, you know, someone's coming, but it's not Scott, and I guess it's that she means Theo. Unless she meant Styles, but presumably she means Theo, or Jordan, or Parrish, because Styles is out in the hallway, and that's kind of when Theo and his chimeras come up, and apparently they don't actually care about Lydia, they want to capture, or I don't know, have a conversation with a hellhound, and, you know, one has come, you know, Parrish has shown up when he thinks Lydia is in danger, as the hellhound, so... Any thoughts on what that all means?
Is that actually what's going on? Because I was honestly confused.
I don't know.
It did seem like when Lydia was in danger of Theo and the chimeras coming in, that he, you know, his hellhound power set off and he went into his trance and he went after him. Did it mean that, you know, people were going to die and he was there to collect the bodies? Is he specifically protecting Lydia, or is he protecting the pack because they're the good guys? It wasn't entirely clear, but I am definitely interested in the fact that Theo wants Parrish more than he wants Lydia.
Yeah, why?
it must factor into his plan somehow. I mean, he wants the beast's powers, and we know that Parrish as the Hellhound has to fight the beast. So maybe he wants Parrish in order to draw the beast in?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It's really weird to me, like, that he thinks that he can do it, you know, control Parrish or achieve anything with Parrish, or what, you know, does he know anything about how to use Parrish's powers? Like, what is going on?
I don't know. I think it's clear that one of Theo's biggest issues is hubris, and hopefully that bites him in the ass soon enough, because he's playing a very big game and he's still just a teenager. Like, clearly he knows a lot of stuff, but I don't know if he's good enough to be able to control the situation when you have players like a Hellhound and the Beast and the Dread Doctors and Valak, who could potentially be very dangerous, whether he's on the side of good or not. Like, he clearly knows a lot of stuff too. And I just feel like Theo's biting off way more than he can chew. He's got Deucalion tied up. Like, that's no joke.
It's really weird. I don't know. He's playing with fire, like, literally. Like, he's like, what does he think he can control or achieve? Because it's ridiculous at this point. And why is he like this? What is his damage? What the frickin' frack did he do to his sister and his parents? Like, what's going on with those parents, guys? Like, I love you, Teen Wolf writers, but if you don't frickin' cover what the hell that thing was with his parents, I'm gonna be really unstoked, because that was weird as shit. So, what's going on? I don't know. Like, it's just, this kid is deranged, and it's so much. Like, I don't think we've ever had a villain with, like, this much on their plate before, if you know what I mean. Like, it was, like, juggling this many potential issues and just, you know, without, a clear goal, I guess, or without, just not knowing the motivation for what the hell they're doing. So,
I think the interesting thing about Theo was, and you kind of touched on this earlier when you said he's been a main character for this season, is a lot of our other villains were revealed in, like, the last three episodes. Like, even if you think back to season one and season two, where we had, like, you know, Gerard was revealed in the final couple of episodes, and Peter as the Alpha was revealed later, and I guess, like, Deucalion and them showed up fairly early on, but even like the Duroc and the Nagitsune and stuff, those were all revealed late in the game, because that's the twist. Whereas Theo has been this evil thread throughout the entire season, and it's made his backstory much more interesting, but it also means we're getting it much more slowly, and it's frustrating, but I'm hoping there's going to be a big payoff, because we still have five whole episodes left. So I'm hoping that they're going to start giving us some information soon.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, when the Icon guards realize that, you know, Theo has brought some supernatural warfare into Icon, presumably, and the, you know, shit starts going down, it goes into lockdown. Like, basically, Natalie has actually taken the advice of Sheriff Stilinski and gone to at least check on Lydia and, like, rings the doorbell and is like, hello, I need to see my daughter right now. And, you know, just she goes in and she finds the, you know, perimeter security is breached. Like, none of the locks out there are working. But then the internal shutters are, you know, all slammed down and everything is all crazy, you know, all getting locked down. Kira is about to, like, short out with, you know, her and Malia are still in the electricity room. But, you know, what was the circumstance, you know, with Kira and Icon? Like, we had this before, that it has a weird effect on her, or the Dread Doctors have a weird effect on her. Why was this again?
I think the reason why she was starting to go crazy like that is because she took in that power from the wires, and now the extra electricity is inside her, and she doesn't know how to channel it and control it yet.
Yeah.
So, but to go back to Natalie Martin really quickly, I think this is really interesting because it seems like she's going to be part of the action, maybe. I mean, she's locked out of Viking House, but something is definitely going on inside. Is she going to find her way in? Is she going to come face to face with Supernatural and not be able to deny it any longer? Because in the interview that I was talking about earlier, it's with TV Line, Holland Roden talks about filming, which I'll get to in a second. But she also says, like, Natalie Martin doesn't know about the supernatural. I think she knows something weird's going on, but I also think she's just trying to deny it to keep herself sane, which is fair. You know, some weird stuff does happen in Beacon Hills, but if she ends up coming face to face with whatever's going on at this point, how is that going to change her relationship with the sheriff, change her relationship with Lydia, with the pack? Is she going to be more involved from now on? I'd be really interested to see that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But after that, we get the guards attacking Scott and Liam. They spot them after it goes into lockdown. And this part was kind of crazy to me because they just attack them, and maybe they knew that they were werewolves, but if not, there was four guys on Scott and they were pummeling him and hitting him with all that electricity, and it just seemed very excessive.
Yeah, it was extremely, like, those guys, like, I mean, even earlier in the episodes when, like, Naked Guy was like, it's natural, and the guy's like, so is 50,000 volts, and, like, you know, electrocutes him or whatever. Like, what is with those guys?
They're really intense.
It's really insane. Like, I don't understand how that's, like, okay. So, yeah.
Well, it's not, but the fact that they haven't been shut down yet is questionable.
Yeah.
But my favorite part of the episode, hands down, is when Scott sees that Liam's in trouble because he's getting attacked too, and he just goes into alpha mode, and he throws... You know what? I cried twice. Like, I watched this episode twice, and I cried both times because it was so great. It was like Scott saw that he was in trouble, knew he had to be the alpha, and he calls out to his pack, and he throws off the guards, and the pack responds. Like, Styles looks up because he hears him, and Malia's eyes glow, and it was such an amazing moment, and it was so powerful because he's got his pack back. And they're ready to kick butt, even though literally their entire plan has gone to shit. It doesn't matter because they're together and they're going to figure it out.
Aw, so beautiful.
It was beautiful. Didn't that make you emotional?
I mean, I guess. Yeah, it was nice.
Oh, my gosh.
I cried more in Agent Carter.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry. Okay. If I have to compare, I watched them one after the other, and I've cried more in Agent Carter, so sorry if that's a problem.
Okay, before we get into feedback, I do want to just talk about this interview with Holland Roden for TV Line really quickly, in that I don't know if anybody knew this, I certainly didn't. She filmed those scenes of her in the bed for over a year. Because they kept doing it, different parts, different angles, and I'm just like, wow.
Back in the bed, Holland. She's like,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But
I
mean, they did such a good job, and I really liked in this episode that they went back to that conversation between Lydia and Dr. Valak, but we got it from Styles' point of view, and we heard different parts of the conversation that we've never actually heard before. And it was a great way, like they did the other day or the other week when they had that similar scene in the episode that we had already seen before, but they intercut it with other things. This was at different angles and different things were said and it meant different things in this moment. And they just did a really good job of, like, bringing it full circle, but also making it feel really fresh again.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really liked the take on it and like Styles hearing that and everything about it. Yeah. I was into that. So, yeah.
Cool. Let's jump into feedback. Do you want to get this first one, which came from Hypable?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Brack on Hypable says, I love how Scott's alpha roar is the Teen Wolf equivalent of the Thundercat signal. Okay. I'm not familiar enough with Thundercats to know about the signal, but do they have like a call to arms or something?
Isn't it just the Thundercats ho?
Oh, yes. I mean, you're probably right. That's, you know, Scott clearly needs like a call sign for the pack or something like that.
Yeah.
It was
great. I love to, Danielle does all of our live tweeting on our account because I have to do the recap and nobody else is usually available to do it at that time. And she said on Twitter, forget squad goals, it's pack goals now. And I'm like, oh, that is so true. I want to use that all the time now.
I enjoyed that. And yeah, no, I can go with that. Can I just say this next piece of feedback? The first sentence, I really thought this was going to be like something about me, like about like, about like, did I like predict something or like, did I yell really loud or something? And then I realized, read the rest of the paragraph and realized I was, you know, realized I was crazy. So you want to read it?
Yeah, this one I picked for the end of it because Sarah C. says, so is/was Natalie a banshee, and when she gave birth to Lydia, her powers passed on to her daughter, along the lines of the Desert Wolf claiming that Malia stole her powers. In the promo for next week, the woman walking down the steps could definitely be Natalie, and her holding her hands against the metal fencing/door is highly reminiscent of Meredith's and Lydia's lessons. We already did point out that Natalie is not the one with the banshee genes, so I think that's highly unlikely. I do believe that was her holding her hands against the fence, but I think something is going on where, like, everything's electrical, or maybe there's just, like, a weird feeling going about there. I'm not sure. We do know that Natalie has been in Lydia's room and therefore could pass through the mountain ash. Not that doesn't mean she's absolutely not supernatural, because could still be a possibility. But the last thing Sarah C. said was, a supernatural creature being in denial about their own powers would be a new and unique subplot for the Teen Wolf universe. I actually really liked this idea, which is why I wanted to bring it up, because I'm not entirely sure if Mrs. Martin is supernatural, but if she was and was just like pushing down that side of her and making, you know, herself forget that it even existed and denying her powers would be really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, she could be. Maybe she's the beast.
Maybe.
So, yeah, it could very much be true. Last question, last feedback, Twitter, James Anderson, Fox for Naught says, can we all agree that now we really want Scott to just beat the hell out of Theo in a one-on-one fight? Seriously. I don't know, do you want Theo to beat the hell out of Scott, or would you rather it be someone less, like, tarnished than, you know, like, you know, someone who could really give him what he deserved and that Scott wouldn't fight dirty enough?
I don't know if I want Scott to beat Theo up, just because I feel like that would be out of character for Scott, unless he was defending his own life or even the life of one of his pack members, he would do that. But he's so hesitant to really have blood on anyone's hands that I think it's important for him to stay that way. And they've said that before, like, they can't have Scott just killing all those people because Scott's so noble, and it would really change his character if he went off the deep end like that. Would I mind if he punched Theo in the face? No, not at all. But I think Theo's either going to end by somebody else's hand or his own, or maybe not actually end at all, but, you know, end up in Eichenhaus.
Yeah, it could do. Yeah, I mean, we certainly know he's a sociopath, like, and he needs to, you know, not be around people of any type. So Yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps he'll get locked up next to Peter. They'd have a fun
they
time.
They would probably keep good company.
Yeah. They'd have a really fun time. Yeah. So, yeah, and then I guess next week we're going to see how this all plays out. So what do you think's going to happen?
Well, they're going to get Lydia out of there somehow. I remember seeing in one of the trailers Styles running Lydia down one of the tunnels or something and being like, I have a plan or something. And she's like, you had a plan? And he was like, well, we're working on it.
Yeah.
Which is even funnier now because they totally had a plan.
Where they're bringing her out. So
yeah. But the other thing we saw in the promo was Lydia screaming. And I think that this is like her powers kind of going crazy and they're going to have to figure out a way to fix that. And honestly, I have no idea how.
Yeah. No, neither. So that's going to be interesting. You know, she didn't... Yeah, that's right. When they're running down the hallway, she doesn't look quite as, like, sweaty and bleeding as she did in this bit. So perhaps she's not as bad off as we think. You know, she's...
Maybe. I mean, she looked tired, and it looked like Styles kind of had to hold her up, but... Yeah. I don't know. She did seem a little bit more aware of her surroundings at that point.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Could be interesting. Yeah, and then hopefully Malia doesn't explode and all of that. So hopefully that's all fine.
Malia? Oh, you mean Kira?
I mean, yeah, hopefully Kira doesn't explode. Sorry.
Yeah, that was really interesting where she was like, Malia, get out of here. And she was like looking all frazzled and stuff. And I'm really interested because we're learning so much more about Lydia's powers, how Kira's going to control her powers and what exactly she can do. Because it's clear that if she is able to absorb that power from the wires, that electricity, that she's supposed to be able to do something with it. So once she can figure out how to channel it, I think it'll be really useful.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, she really hasn't been that great at it so far, I will admit. Yeah, I have no further predictions as to what will happen next week, especially what the hell they want with Parrish and anything, pretty much, or what the hell Dr. Valak's deal is, so... Yeah, I don't know, I don't feel too bad about the cliffhanger. Like, I've had worse cliffhangers in my life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I just wanted more because the episode was so good.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to, have to hang on until next week, I suppose. So, until then, yeah, we'll, you know, you can theorize about how they're gonna get their way out of this one. So, yeah. All right, until next week, I suppose we will have to let you go and leave you hanging. So this has been us on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, and until then, we'll say bye, unless there's anything Karen desperately wants to tell you.
Nope.
No, all good. No other major news, revelations. Cool.
No, not really.
All right. In that case, we'll all say bye and see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go. I'll do the thing. Oh, I'm tired. Can't we recap Agent Carter instead?
No.
Well, that episode of Agent Carter was really good.